Welcome to Chasing the Yield. This is Kevin Bay, episode number 38, January 31st, 2022. It's actually February 1st. I was supposed to do this yesterday, and I screwed up. So I'm doing it today, and I skipped last week, so a week late and a day short. But at least it's here, because you've all been waiting. You've been waiting with bated breath. Did everybody survive early last week watching the stock market just become a mess? You know, when you're watching it drop 1,000 points, you know, it rallied back. You know, to where it ended, I think it was Monday when you had the 1,000-point drop, and things were just all over the road most of the day, making everybody sweat, like, what the hell was going on? And then, you know, it slowly starts to crawl itself back, you know, which is, you know, why I've probably said it a million times already in just 30 episodes, where, yes, I watch the stock market, and I watch the prices go up and down, and, you know, while, yes, I would rather it stay up and continue to climb, my portfolios are not based on necessarily the stock price growth. You know, I'm looking for stock price stability. Growth is always good, you know, but it's just really preservation of principal while collecting a dividend payout. By the way, if you feel so inclined, you can donate to the show. There's a big red donate button on the show page and on the website. This is also a value for value podcast. So if you're listening on one of the new podcast apps, if you go to newpodcastapps.com, there are several in there where you can pay your favorite podcast streaming Bitcoin micropayments. And I got a link on my site that tries to explain some of this. So I'm terrible at explaining it. So I'll keep trying to add to the to that page on my site that maybe will help explain it better. But anyway, let's just get right into things here. Today, the market is kind of flat. It's down a bit. The NASDAQ is down 1%, though. That's quite a bit. S&P is, you know, down 0.5%. Dow Jones is down 0.33%. So things are relatively flat, let's say. But let's see, first thing in the news, for me at least, because I'm an AT&T holder, is that AT&T said it would roughly halve its dividend payout and divest its Warner Media division through a spinoff that will give shareholders 0.24 shares for each AT&T share they own, a move that would complete its retreat from, you know what, let's see, I am streaming this on YouTube, so I should probably fix that. Okay, there we go. Let's see, where was I? Warner Media Division through a spinoff that will give shareholders 0.24 shares for each AT&T share they own, a move that would complete its retreat from the entertainment business. The company is picking up a simpler method, to complete its planned deal with Discovery that will make the transaction easier for individual investors to digest, but will still leave the telecom company with about 7.2 billion shares outstanding. The deal is expected to close in the second quarter. After the spinoff, AT&T said it expects to pay an annual per-share dividend of about $1.11, down from its most recent $2.08 level. The new payout would cost the company just under $8 billion a year, down from the roughly $15 billion it paid out in 2021. AT&T is one of the most widely held U.S. stocks, and the company has historically offered one of the largest regular dividend payouts on the market. Based on Monday's closing price, it had an 8.16% dividend yield. By comparison, Verizon, which I also hold, had a dividend yield of 4.81% based on Monday's prices. So while, you know, cutting the dividend in half is not a good thing for, you know, if you're looking for that income, obviously, in the long run, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, because AT&T shedding off these other units should make the company more nimble and make it give it the ability to better compete in its core markets. So while the stock is down today, let's see, right now it's down 5%. I think after all of this stuff shakes out, I think that stock price is going to recover. While the dividend will still be, you know, somewhere around 4% or so, the dividend yield, 4% is still nothing to sneeze at. So I'm expecting that to climb back up. And, you know, while I may need to make an adjustment here or there, let me see. What is my, let's see, let me take a look here. Let's see, I'm trying to look up what I have for AT&T holding. Okay, so my shares right now are in my medium yield portfolio. So you can go take a look at that on the site. And it consists right now of 0.3%. So a third of 1% of my entire portfolio. For the entire, since the beginning, because the stock has been going down, especially while it started shedding the entertainment units, it's down 21.5%. My annual income on that particular stock itself is $318. Let's see here. So if they you know, cut the dividend in half, then I'm looking at maybe $150 reduction in annual income from that particular holding. But I believe as the stock price recovers over the next few years, that I'll be able to get back the market value loss for the shares. But we'll see. It's not, you know, it's not a big movement one way or the other for the totality of my portfolio. So we'll just have to see how it shakes out. So could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. Who knows? We'll find out. Consumer pessimism grows as inflation accelerates, U.S. consumer spending now being tested by Omicron's persistence, waning fiscal stimulus, inflation, stock market volatility. That's the headline in the Wall Street Journal. I think Omicron has very little to do with any of this other than the fact that the coronavirus continues to be the catalyst for all government action. And if you look at what has happened over the last 2 years, specifically with government stimulus, remember, everything that's been happening over the last 2 years is kind of a fake economy, at least in my opinion. The government, you know, basically printed close to $5 trillion over the last 2 years. And what they have done is they have covered both the supply side and the demand side with money. They, you know, you've got state governments, local city governments that were once bankrupt, essentially. Some of them now are paying their bills and being able to run a surplus, not because they've done anything better, not because they've improved anything or cut spending or improved revenues or attracted more business. It's strictly because of the federal government printing money and sending it to the states. You know, cities like Chicago and Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, all of them have benefited a great deal from the printing of cash. So any surpluses they show or any budget improvements that they show are strictly because of federal dollars, which us taxpayers all have to pay back. You know, and the same thing goes for the private sector. The private sector was propped up heavily by, you know, the payroll protection program. And while it wasn't perfect, you know, that's why the job recovery, or the at least the economic recovery that we show was so fast, is that all this money got just pumped in. So, you know, some businesses could stay in business, and then they gave the federal government gave people the money to spend money at the businesses that were being propped up. So every single aspect of our economy was propped up by government printing money. How that shakes out down the road, who knows? But that to me shows or is the catalyst for the inflation we see today. And while if the government would have knocked it off, let's say, you know, in towards the end of 2021, going into the first year of the Biden administration, if we would have knocked things off towards the summer and just reopened, gone back to normal course of business, inflation may have been transitory, as they were saying before. But they didn't. They kept it going. And they tried to ram another gigantic stimulus bill down the nation's throat. So, you know, because what is happening right now, I don't know if anybody can really tell what is organic and what isn't and where the economy is going to end up, because it is being propped up on both sides by printing cash. And the printing of cash has come to an end, at least right now. There's still money in the system, but it's not being thrown around as wildly as it was before, because Congress hasn't approved the other gigantic spending bill. So the problem here is inflation is increasing at a faster pace than wages are increasing. And we're going to get into this vicious cycle of the cost of everything is going to go up because the cost of labor, which is a huge portion of everything that you pay for, is going up. So as the cost of labor goes up, the cost of consumer goods and services go up, and we have this vicious cycle of inflation that combined with the devaluing of the dollar by printing so much, you know, contributes a great deal to all of this. So the Wall Street Journal story, they start out, consumer perception of current economic conditions in December was almost even with April 2020 levels. So, you know, after almost 2 years of this, when sentiment bottomed out following the first major restrictions to control the coronavirus pandemic. While Americans' feelings about their personal finances slid through much of 2021, concerns about buying conditions amid continuing worries about inflation fell drastically for much of the year. Household income has declined from spikes that occurred as the government distributed pandemic-related stimulus. Still, many Americans have seen wages and benefits increase as the economy rebounded from earlier disruptions from the pandemic. So they tell you right there. I mean, the government supplied both sides of the economy. At the same time, decades-high levels of inflation have tempered enthusiasm for spending. University of Michigan has seen less enthusiasm for large purchases during the pandemic, with 41% of consumers citing high prices as a reason not to buy in December. Uncertainty and a lack of affordability were the leading causes for hesitance throughout much of 2020. And that's because nobody really knows where this is going to lead. You have that feeling like the whole thing can collapse. When you have, I forgot what the number is now, the labor participation rate isn't still not back to where it was pre-pandemic, pre-2020. During the final year in Trump's term, the labor participation rate was at an all-time high. You had more people entering the workforce because things were improving. Then after that, it's not the final year, it's the year before his final year, because the final year was the pandemic year when the bottom dropped out. Those people have not come back to work. So the low unemployment rate we see is not the true unemployment rate, because there's a whole bunch of people that just exited the workforce. So you get that sinking feeling that something, you know, the bottom can drop out here fairly quickly if things don't stabilize. And I think if we get back to opening up and the government, you know, gets back out of the way, that maybe there's a chance that we can crawl out of this without too much damage. But I don't know, things aren't looking good at the moment. Chevron reported their most profitable year since 2014. Another Wall Street Journal story. The U.S. oil giant's annual earnings were a dramatic turnaround from 2020, when Chevron lost $5.5 billion after the global pandemic routed demand for oil and gas. It reported a fourth quarter profit of $5.1 billion Friday, up from $665 million loss during the same period last year. Chevron also said it generated $21.1 billion in free cash flow in 2021, its most ever. Chevron's stock price reached its highest level Thursday, closing at more than $135 a share, as investors reacted to Chevron's announcement that it would raise its quarterly dividend by 6%, but the company's shares fell more than 4% in pre-market trading Friday morning following the release of its fourth quarter earnings, which were lower than analysts had expected. And let's see, Chevron has a current dividend yield of 4.37%, rated as safe by Simply Safe Dividends. I hold Chevron in my low yield portfolio. In total, it is 0.6% of my portfolio. Bank of America, the chief global economist for Bank of America, sees seven interest rate hikes in 2022. Sounds kind of crazy. Sounds like way too much, but this is what he's saying. It was another story in the Wall Street Journal. It says the Fed is likely to raise its now near zero short-term interest rate target seven times over the course of this year on its way to a stopping point of between 2.75 and 3%, wrote Ethan Harris, chief global economist for the bank. The Fed has all but admitted that it's behind the curve when it comes to controlling inflation, and this monetary policy path should affect the economy with a lag weighing on 2023 growth, Mr. Harris wrote. That's a really odd quote. I think they've chopped up the quotation here. Yeah, quote, the Fed has all but admitted that it is behind the curve, end quote, when it comes to controlling inflation and its monetary policy path, quote, should affect the economy with a lag weighing on 2023 growth, end quote, Mr. Harris wrote. So that's just a poor way of scraping the quote. Makes it hard to understand. He said in his note he had trimmed his growth outlook for this year to a 3.6% increase and now sees inflation stripped of food and energy costs rising by 3% from 2.6% over 2022. The Bank of America forecast for monetary policy compares with the central bank outlook released at its December meeting, which points to the possibility of three rate rises this year. A number of Fed officials have affirmed that they see three rate rises, although some officials, like St. Louis Fed leader James Bullard, reckons four rate rises could be appropriate, while Fed Governor Christopher Waller said even more increases are on the table. So nobody knows what the hell they're talking about here with this. No, it's just like speculation all over the road. So I wrote at the time when I read this story, I said, somehow I doubt anyone is reading the tea leaves correctly. I certainly don't know what the answer is, but one guy predicting seven, others predicting four, and the nation's central bank talking about three. I'll split the difference here and predict five. Although I bet for some reason there will only be two, I'm hedging. So I think my predictions will be as good as their predictions because their predictions are all over the road. So I split the difference. Sorry, I needed a coffee break. Throat is getting a little dry. Caterpillar, hampered by supply chain issues, Caterpillar said Friday that it continues to have trouble obtaining enough electronic semiconductors and other parts to make hydraulic shovels and asphalt pavers. The company's backlog for the quarter ended December 31st increased more than 60% from the year before to around $23 billion. Demand is strong, but the ability of us to meet that demand is dependent on the unwinding of some of the supply chain challenges, said Andrew Bonfield, Caterpillar's chief financial officer. The key for us is to reduce the bottlenecks as much as possible. Caterpillar's shares fell 5.2% to $201.16 on Friday as the company said a profit measure had declined due to higher shipping and manufacturing costs. The company reported higher than expected shipping costs in the latest quarter as it used more expensive means like air shipments to speed deliveries to customers. Caterpillar and other manufacturers have been dealing with port delays, higher trucking and flying costs, as well as difficulties obtaining enough parts and computer chips. Many of the problems have been driven by strong orders across the board, stretching the economy's ability to make enough products, manufacturers said. The backlog is now worth nearly half of Caterpillar's sales for the just completed year. So it's good and bad. the supply chain issues under control and things can accelerate for Caterpillar. Caterpillar, they have a current dividend yield, at least as I blog this, of 2.21% and is rated very safe by Simply Safe Dividends. I hold Caterpillar in my low yield portfolio and it is 0.9% of my portfolio. Moving on, portfolio update. So last week, even given all the turmoil, wasn't too bad. My low yield portfolio was only down 0.03% for the week, and it's down 2.92% so far for the month and year. My medium yield portfolio was up 0.58% for the week, and is down 2.32% for the month and year. And the high yield portfolio is the shining star right now, which was not the shining star last year. It is up 0.23% for the week and up 4.11% for the month and year. The only dividend received last week was from Canadian Imperial Bank of $109.29. And we have a whole lot of dividend events last week. Let's see here. We got Arrow Financial. They announced the next dividend at 27 cents per share, a 3.8% increase over their previous payout of 26 cents. Chevron, their next dividend of $1.42 per share, a 6% increase over their previous payout of $1.34 per share. Kimberly-Clark, their next dividend of $1.16 per share is a 1.8% increase over their previous payout of $1.14. Archer Daniels Midland announced their next dividend of 40 cents per share, an 8.1% increase over their previous payout of 37%. The next, from here on down, their next dividends are all in line with previous payouts. Magellan Midstream Partners, their next dividend of $1.03 per share. Artesian Resources Corporation, their next dividend of 26¾ cents per share. J.M. Smucker's, their next dividend, 99 cents per share. Shell Midstream Partners, 30 cents per share. Cross America Partners, next dividend of 52.5 cents per share. First Source Corporation, their next dividend of 31 cents per share. Kinder Morgan, their next dividend of 27 cents per share. And One Oak, their next dividend of 93.5 cents per share. This is a Podcasting 2.0 compatible podcast. That means if you're listening to this podcast on a Podcasting 2.0 compatible app, you'll have access to transcripts, chapters, and chapter images that accompany each episode. Please go to newpodcastapps.com to download and support these independent apps, and go to podcastindex.org to support Podcasting 2.0. And if you've been paying attention to the latest news about podcasting, with the cancellation or the attempt to cancel Joe Rogan over some previous interviews of doctors and things having to do with COVID, should point out that anybody with an independent voice or a voice that wants to remain independent, should really, especially if you're a big name and you have a big following, latching on to the platforms, different platforms like, Apple and Spotify are attractive because they pay big money, but with that big money comes restraints. And if they went independent, where it's not that hard to start their own website and host their own files and, do this totally independently where people can pay them directly, heck, if I can do it, and just one guy in an office, in Northeast Georgia, a guy like Joe Rogan, should be able to easily do that. And the No Agenda Show, I think, is a prime example as well of, two guys putting together a show and having the users, or the listeners rather, totally support all of that. I've got some dinging happening somewhere. I think it's on the other desk. So this is also, sorry about that, value for value enabled. And if you go to newpodcastapps.com, you could pick out a modern podcast app that where you can stream Bitcoin micropayments to your favorite podcaster. I am not a registered investment advisor, broker, or dealer. I may have positions in any financial instrument, product, or company mentioned on chasingtheyield.com or on this podcast. Information provided on the website or the podcast is provided for information and entertainment purposes only. and are not intended as advice or a recommendation or an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security or financial instrument. All opinions are based upon sources believed to be accurate and are provided in good faith. No warranty, representation, or guarantee expressed or implied is made as to the accuracy of the information contained herein. Please contact an investment professional if you have any questions regarding an investment. So that is all we've got for this week. Hopefully it's a much more smooth ride. Happy New Year to Asian people, Chinese and Koreans. I'm half Korean, so I've never celebrated Lunar New Year ever, but Happy New Year anyway. Year of the Tiger. So go get your rice cakes. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.